Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to yet another virtual meeting in this bizarre, bizarre times. Amazing that we're at, what, 11 months, maybe 10 months for some of us on this. And we went from never hearing about blue jeans to mastering it. So if there's any problems, if we get some glitches, we can always switch to a conference call. So keep that in mind. Brandy, will you take roll call, please?
Absolutely. Judge Buckley?
Here.
Ms. Fleming?
Here.
Thank you. Judge Cope?
Here.
Judge Kelly?
Here.
Judge Thompson? He's on vacation. Ms. Carter?
I am here. Thank you.
You?
Oh, I'm here. Sorry. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Thank you.
Ms. Eberhardt is out today. Mr. Planet? See you there. I heard you earlier. Going to mark you present, Mike. Mr. Taniguchi?
Yes, here.
Thank you. And Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes, good afternoon. I'm here.
Thank you so much.
So to make sure the connections are as strong as possible, please mute yourself. But when you are speaking, obviously unmute. Again, something that we never said before, and now we say it probably three, four times a day, you're on mute. Your name should be at the bottom of your pictures. Beth, please remember to give your name prior to speaking. So there's no other housekeeping at the outset. Entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the June 2, 2020 FMS meeting, which can be found at pages 3 to 5 of the materials.
Cope, I move approval.
Yeah, Yamasaki will second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposition? Okay. Moving on to public comment. Written public comments were not received for this meeting. And this concludes the public comment portion of the meeting. We're fortunate to have John Warlaw joining us. And so, John, we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Judge Buckley, and thank you, committee members, for giving me a few minutes to provide you a quick budget update. Yesterday, as you know, the governor announced that he has an agreement with legislative leadership, the speaker and the pro tem, on a budget package really designed to assist folks that are struggling as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. A piece of that package, which is very welcome news, is a full restoration of the $200 million cut that the branch received effective last July 1st. And so this restoration would become effective provided that the legislature enacts the restoration through the budget process would be effective July 1st. 2021. And so really welcome news. I must say that the Chief Justice Martin Hishino had been having conversations with the governor's staff and legislative leadership about the strong need to have restorations as the state revenue picture improved. And so we're very, very pleased to see that the governor and the legislative leadership have recognized the critical services provided by the courts. And so with that, I wanted to let you know that information specifically for the courts, it means $176.9 million would be restored effective July 1st. And that is in addition to what the governor has proposed in his January 10 budget release, which included $118 million in backfill as well as another $72.2 million for trial court operations. You'll recall there was a proposal that the branch put together asking for recognition of statewide cost increases. We tied it to CPI, Consumer Price Index, to the extent of 3.7%. That exact dollar amount was proposed by the governor, and so we are very pleased to see that that still remains as a governor's priority in his proposal. So wanted to give that, I think, very good news to folks. That said, we're not at the finish line yet. My understanding is that the overall package or agreement that was struck, there are pieces that are moving through the legislature for very quick approval, and there are pieces that are moving through the budget process. And I think, and I say I think because I haven't seen the actual finance letter yet that the Department of Finance sends to the legislature, but it's my understanding that the restorations are going through the budget process, and so finance will be sending over the materials to the legislature for consideration as they are moving through the final budget enactment. Again, the fact that we have all legislative leadership, the Speaker, Pro Tem, as well as the governor behind this speaks volumes, and I think it's a very positive signal of the intent of the legislature in moving forward. So with that, I'll stop Judge Buckley and see if there are any questions.
Any questions for John?
Judge Buckley, this is David Yamasaki. I don't have any questions, just a remark if you'll allow me.
Of course.
Yeah, so I think this news is extremely welcome to us in the trial courts as we have been looking for ways to deal with the challenges before us. And I just wanted to extend a huge appreciation, certainly for myself and perhaps some of you, if not all of you, about the efforts that have been maintained to try to recognize and bring attention to the challenges that we face. So I just wanted to say an enormous thank you to you, John, and Martin, and certainly the Chief Justice and the advocacy efforts. Remember last year, we got some pretty good news in January, only to have it pivot a little bit. So I recognize that this is a long process, and notwithstanding that, hopefully things hold up such that we can start getting back on our feet after a really, really tough 12 months that we've had this far. But just wanted to extend my personal thank you to everybody who's been involved with helping us deal with the issues that we have. So thank you.
Judge Buckley, this is Mike Planet.
Yes, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. I want to echo David's comments too and say in a time of, this is best news of the month, maybe of the year. And I appreciate all the efforts, John, that you all have done, and the chief and Martin, Zach O'Fran, everybody to get this through. It's great. And we'll just pray that Lucy doesn't move the football again.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
Judge Buckley.
Yes.
I want to also echo what Mike and David have said. You know, as soon as this memo hit the wire yesterday, my phone's been blowing up, and it started up again this morning at 6:30, and it's nothing but everybody's relief and such appreciation for the administration, for the chief. And so thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Yeah.
Well, I can say with confidence that each one of us would echo those very articulate comments, John, and please, please pass on that to a person. This subcommittee is ecstatic, but extremely appreciative as well.
Okay.
Any other questions? Sure thing. Any other questions or thoughts for John? Okay. The next month, can you double that, John?
Working on it, Judge.
Okay. Again, our appreciation for both being here and all the great work you're doing.
Okay. Thanks, all.
Thank you, John. So let's move on to the agenda. We'll go to the first discussion item. This is an action item. And Kristen, if you could please present.
Great. Thank you, Judge. And my apologies, I'm going to keep my video off. I am having horrible issues today with connection. So if that's okay, I'll just keep my audio on. All right. So in January of this year, two similar adjustment request proposals, ARPs, were submitted by Humboldt and Siskiyou Superior Courts and have been referred to this committee for review. Both ARPs are in your materials. The request presented in the proposals focuses on the Bureau of Labor Statistics factor, the BLS factor, used in the workload formula model, specifically seeking to modify the BLS factor and create a floor for cluster two courts, and if certain criteria met, cluster one courts as well. The floor being requested is 0.95 for fiscal year 21-22 and 1.0 for fiscal year 22-23. And just as a refresher, the Bureau of Labor Statistics factor acts as a cost of labor index, and it's used to adjust salary as well as salary-driven benefits for each county. It's based on the cost of government employee labor in each county. We primarily use local, but we also use state if certain criteria are met. And just as background, the issue presented in the ARPS has been reviewed previously by this committee. As part of the FMS work plan, staff were asked to evaluate cluster two courts relative to the workload formula to assess whether any aspects of the model or any inputs in the model, including the BLS factor, negatively impact cluster two courts. The analysis done by staff did show that cluster two courts, or courts really in the smaller clusters, cluster one and two, tend to have a lower BLS compared to courts in other clusters. However, when all factors in the model were considered, cluster two courts generally do not appear to be at a funding disadvantage compared to other clusters. And additionally, we looked kind of at the cluster as a whole, and there did not appear to be a systematic issue in the model that negatively impacted the cluster as a whole. The subcommittee did discuss the idea of adjusting the BLS factor at that time, such as applying a floor, but decided that doing so would essentially negate the premise of applying a wage index in the model. Further analysis that we did during that time was looking at clustering more broadly to see if courts made sense as part of the cluster they are assigned to. So staff found that if the clusters were established today, basically using the same methodology, so using authorized judicial positions, as well as cluster one being comprised solely of those two judge courts, but again, current and updated data, the cluster groupings would remain largely unchanged. And I say largely unchanged because we had the one change to San Francisco that we did around that time, but that was in cluster, moving them from cluster four to cluster three. So the subcommittee recommended no change to the workload formula related to cluster two courts, as well as making no change to the Bureau of Labor Statistics factor. However, the subcommittee did vote to include a review of the cluster methodology in its work plan. So that ends my presentation on the work that was done. I can either read the recommendation or hold off on that.
Well, why don't we start off? Are there any questions of Kristen? So what I hear is that this request has been made. A decision was not to act on it, but in fact, have something we're going to discuss a little bit later on the work plan, and that is to take another look at the cluster system. The one thought would be, it being an action item, is that we repeat what was done before and decide not to follow up on this request, but continue to evaluate the cluster system as indicated in the work plan. If that is consistent with your thoughts, would entertain a motion.
So this is Sherry Carter. Can you hear me, Judge Buckley?
I can, yes.
I actually think that is a better approach. If we are going to continue to look at cluster two, it probably makes sense. I think it's important to remember, though, that as noted on page six, that when funding level is considered, cluster two courts generally do not appear to be at a funding disadvantage. I think there is really a misunderstanding as to how the BLS factor works. And so part of it could be an education thing, but part of it could also be the assessment of cluster two. So the bottom line is, yes, I would make a motion that we continue to study, you know, the cluster two as part of our work plan and not to make any adjustments at this time.
Judge Buckley, this is David Yamasaki. I would second that motion.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay, there's been a motion, it's been seconded. No discussion on that. Again, it's odd to say aye when everyone has to unmute. So what I'll do is, does anyone oppose this motion? Okay. Hearing no opposition, then it does pass unanimously. Kristen, thank you very much. Rebecca?
Thank you, Judge Buckley. I would like to now introduce Cottrell Wood to report out on the interpreter program methodology and the subcommittee recommendations. Cottrell?
Hi, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. This is item two, and this is pages 20 through 24 of your materials. And it is the recommendation by the Ad Hoc Interpreter Subcommittee related to unspent court interpreter program funding and allocation methodology for 21-22 and membership changes to the Ad Hoc Interpreter Subcommittee. This past February 4th, the Ad Hoc Interpreter Subcommittee met to consider how best to develop an equitable court interpreter allocation methodology. One data source that was highly considered that meeting was the use of the Court Interpreter Data Collection System, or CIDCS. However, it was determined that given the gaps and limitations in that data, other alternatives need to be considered. And as a result, the ad hoc determined that additional time, additional information, and additional input would be needed to develop an ongoing workload-based methodology for future implementation. Because of that determination, the ad hoc is putting forth three recommendations for consideration, assuming approved by this committee, that would be considered by TIGBAC on March 9th. And those three items are: require courts to return all unspent court interpreter program allocated funds to the Judicial Council for reversion back to the TCTF. Again, I want to remind everyone that those funds would be restricted for court interpreter program use. The second item for consideration is to allocate in 2021 the same amount of funding provided to the trial courts in 2021. That information is on, I believe, page 24 of your materials. It provides a court-by-court breakdown of the allocation. And the third item that is being considered is to expand the number of ad hoc interpreter subcommittee members, continued as a subset of TIGBAC, with members being determined after TIGBAC's consideration and approval on their March 9th meeting. That's the short version, if you will, Judge Buckley, of my presentation. And I imagine now we'd open it up for discussion.
So, Cottrell, I think what we'll do next is ask for any comments from the subcommittee members. And then we also have some comments that were distributed by one of our members that couldn't be here today, Nancy Eberhardt. And so I would invite our members, Sherry Carter, David Yamasaki, Mr. Planet, and I don't believe Ms. Turner is on the line, but would any of you like to speak to the recommendations?
So this is Sherry Carter, and I would like to ask a couple of questions that I don't believe were discussed, or maybe they were, and I just want to remind all of us. So I absolutely agree with the comments that were submitted by Nancy in terms of unspent funds should not be returned to the state pot if there are courts that spent money, local money, on interpreter expenses this fiscal year. They should be reimbursed first. And so One of the things that we looked at is the subcommittee, and one of the things I tried to get my arms around was how much money did we project would be left over, but I don't think I asked the question specifically, are there courts that spent more on interpreter expenses than they received this fiscal year? Because if there are, they should get money to reimburse their interpreter expenses before money goes back to the state pot. Does that make sense?
It does, Sherry, and I actually have the answer to your question. There are 16 courts that did spend more than their allocation, and to the total of $470,000. And Cottrell or Brandy, you can correct me if I'm wrong with that data. But there
what
are
16, month, Rebecca? Through what month?
Through January 2021.
Okay, so I would change the recommendation number one to be that there should be a true up at the end of the fiscal year, and courts that spent money on interpreter expenses should be reimbursed first, and all of the rest of the money then go back to the pot. Because it's very unfair, in my opinion. These are restricted funds. They're intended for interpreter-related expenses. And if courts, because of a funding methodology flaw that we were trying to address anyway, have legitimate interpreter expenses, I think the first recommendation should be modified where if money is returned, it goes to the courts for reimbursement for those expenses, and then it gets pooled after that.
Okay, thank you, Sherry. Before we ask for any kind of official actions, David or Mike Planet, would you like to add to the comments from the subcommittee perspective?
Yeah, Rebecca, this is David, if I may. One of the things that, having been involved with this particular challenge that we had for a number of years, was trying to reconcile the out of balance that this fund was in terms of what was expended and what was available to all of the courts. And the steps that we had taken actually this year, this budget year, was to allocate a reduction in some sort of fair and consistent format so that everybody recognized that there would be a reduction. And of course, this is much different from what we have experienced in years past, where it was a reimbursement as opposed to an allocation model. And the step was really taken because we just didn't have sufficient funds in the account to meet the need. So everybody, I think, in good faith, recognized that we have to all take, I'll call it a haircut in this particular account, but it did not necessarily, reflect what a local court's interpreter needs happen to be. So, some courts were going to have to perhaps spend some money out of their own general fund. That was something that we were obviously loath to do because those funds are very scarce in themselves. So, I think the fact that there will be anticipated a surplus in this account, I think it would be very reasonable to follow through with the recommendation that I think Sherry is making, is that for those courts that actually did not spend all of those resources in this very restricted account, and it goes back into the, we'll call it the pot, the court-wide pot, those courts that did spend out of their general fund the monies for interpreters should be reimbursed for those expenses. And that being said, I still think that there's going to be sufficient funds left over, and we'll be able to recognize what we do going forward. As business starts to resume, we're seeing it, I'm sure many people are, and figuring out what we do next year. But I think for just keeping it to the first recommendation, I think it's very reasonable to follow that suggestion that Sherry has made.
Thank you, David.
Rebecca, this is Mike. Yeah, yes. I concur with what Dave and Sherry have said. I don't really have anything to add. It makes sense to me. There will be a surplus at the end of the year, and I think it's a reasonable approach.
Excellent. Okay, so then, and through the discussion, Sherry and the others have shared out Nancy's concerns, and so are there any questions or discussion from the group about, let's keep it to recommendation number one. Is there any question from the bigger group or statements about recommendation one? And if not, do we have a motion that is being introduced?
Rebecca, this is Judge Buckley. Let me just throw a jab at number one. If we put a period after judicial counsel, so it starts off, require courts to return all unspent CIP allocated funds to the judicial counsel, period. Those funds will first reimburse those courts who incurred shortfalls within their CIP funding, period. And then the remaining funds will be reverted to the trial court trust fund as restricted program funding. Would that, Sherry, be consistent with what you raised?
Yes, I think it would. I don't know how it'll actually happen, you know, with a true up at the end, because we don't want to hurt courts that might have 3% and now they're going to lose it back to the 3%. But that's something they're going to have to work out. But yes, the short answer is yes, it does. And thank you, Judge Buckley.
So would that be a motion, Sherry?
Yes, it would. And I think David already seconded it anyway. Isn't that right, David?
If I haven't, I would have gladly done so. So thank you, Mrs. David.
All right.
Can I ask, Rebecca? I'm sorry. I just want to confirm, would this be one time for the current year funds? Or we're looking for a kind of ongoing recommendation right now?
I don't know why we would need an ongoing, because isn't part of this that the subcommittee was going to review it again next year to come up with, I mean, part of it was we wanted to expand the group and develop ongoing methodologies. So I'm not really sure we should say much about it other than this one year, right? In number one, talking about number one recommendation.
And is that your understanding as well, David?
Yeah, it certainly was. Thank you.
Okay. So, Brandy, do you have the language that Judge Buckley offered?
Yes.
Just to make sure. Okay, good. So, is there any other discussion or questions about this recommendation? Okay. Hearing none, then I'm going to adopt Judge Buckley's approach and ask, does anybody oppose the motion? Please speak up. Okay, hearing none, I am going to say the motion has passed, and let's move on for recommendation one. So let's move on to recommendation two. Does the subcommittee want to comment on the second recommendation that Cottrell presented to us today?
Rebecca, this is David, if I may.
Yes.
So one of the earlier recommendations that we were following and seeing if we can tease out a little bit more was the use of CIDCS. I think some of us refer to it as CIDCS. And that particular tool was developed many, many years ago. And it was a way to identify interpreters that were used for different types of hearings, and it associated a reimbursement in some regard as to validating, you know, a court's receipt of interpreter funds. The tool itself was never developed to the degree that it would really closely monitor exactly the number of interpretations/cases, etc., It was more to just kind of as a high at a high level determine how many interpreters were used by a particular court, but that's about it. It's a very high level description. And so as we started to delve into using this tool to come up with a allocation formula, what we learned was that the information itself was not sufficient. It was lots of gaps. I think there are certain issues that some courts have found in its use and have turned to other tools that more aligned the assignment of an interpreter or the contracting of an interpreter within the case management systems. And full disclosure, Orange, as an example, is using something very different from CIDCS to handle the assignment of court interpreters because it's just not detailed enough to get the job done. So as we started looking at this, it became very obvious that this particular resource would not take us to the place that we need to in order to come up with a formula for allocations. And so it was the belief by the members of the subcommittee that we need to refine kind of the definitions of what would represent an interpreter being needed to a case, refine the definition of perhaps an assignment, maybe even time. I mean, there's a lot of information that needs to be tracked so that we can adequately understand how many interpreters a particular court may need within a given year. And we simply did not have enough time to create something and pitch it to this group and of course then to the Budget Advisory Committee and then to the council. So our recommendation or conclusion was that we try to continue working on another instrument to keep track of the use of interpreters by a court. So that was one of the elements. The other piece was this particular budget year, I think, is a one-off, let's just say. Cases did not advance in the same volume that they've advanced in years past. And if we were to use this year as a guide to perhaps determine how many interpreters would be needed on a consistent basis, that exclusively, I think we would miss the mark in a few different areas if we were to rely on what we did this year. Now, that is overlaid with the reality that many of us are starting to ramp up business as things start to open up, and we anticipate that we're going to be much busier in a few months, much more busy in a few months than we are today. And so we would not look at the amount expended this year as the basis for distribution, but rather the amount that has been allocated this year as something that should continue going on to next year until we can get our arms around how many interpreters a court needs, finding the right instrument to keep track of that. So we're definitely going to be busy, and I think that if we have a target to shoot for in terms of how we spend those resources, then we can obviously look at what we received this year as a good basis for starting out and planning the next budget year. And that's the reason that the recommendation was to just proceed next year in the same amount of the allocation that was given this year.
So this is Sherry Rebecca. I have a different view, and I'm going to kind of bottom line it. I think that, like all the other funding methodologies, it needs to be based on workload. And that's what we're trying to do as a subcommittee, and the reason to expand the group to make sure that we have included other CEOs and counties to talk about what challenges they may have to provide data from their case management systems or other mechanisms to get to workload. The problem I have with allocating the next year at the same level of funding is that it doesn't consider workload if we do that in the beginning. And does that mean we include the adjustments this year for the however many courts you said, 14 courts for 400,000 or not? It wasn't the original allocation. So I'm thinking a better an adjustment may be that we only allocate half at the beginning of the year so that we can start to do any adjustments based on workload for the second half of the allocation. My worry about allocating it based on historical funding is those same 14 courts is now going to grow to 20 courts or 25 courts because we're not considering workload. And I think that we need to, you know, we need to remember that equity and funding should be the model that in everything we do, and equity and funding is really based on workload. So I wonder if a better recommendation would be to allocate in 21-22 one half of the funding provided this year at the beginning of the year with the thought that there would be a reallocation of the remaining funds after the subcommittee has done its work and made recommendations all the way through the council so that when we get to January or February, you know, whatever the period is, we could then allocate and make adjustments based on workload at that point.
Thank you, Sherry. Mike, would you, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, David.
So one of the questions that I have, and I do want to respond to the proposal that Sherry had made, is do we have an idea, an estimate, if we were to subtract the 400 and 470,000 dollars from what we're projecting to be a surplus, how much money would be left?
So, Brandy, correct me if I'm wrong here, or Cottrell, but the courts that are spending less than their allocation have underspent by 8.8. So, doing rough math, it would seem that there would be 8.3 million left after the netted. The 470 was netted out. That's rounding. Am I correct, yeah. Brandy?
Yeah, I'll just caveat that that is information through January, but that's right. Where we are right. As of today. Yes.
Yeah. So just to comment to the suggestion that Sherry had made, I think budgeting this particular activity at just 6 months is very, very difficult because cases. Are going to start piling up. And while some courts may have spent more than the allocation this year, I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case for all courts next year. And I'll use this as an example. What happens if all of us overspend the money that we have received this year? And so I don't know that the activity that we've experienced this year is necessarily going to be a reflection of what we all experience next budget year. The fact that we have potentially $8 million to true up where courts perhaps have been really, really busy and have necessitated the additional interpreters, I think that may be a consideration for stabilizing the court, a court's local funding. So I think that is a an adjustment that could perhaps be made. But for all courts, we like to budget on a full year basis so we know what's in the toolbox. And the fact that we have the $8 million perhaps available to courts that may need it, I think certainly is a good option to have. So I have a slight adjustment to perhaps Sherry's recommendation, and that is to go full year. Yeah.
I agree. If we have $8 million in the bank, then I'm less opposed because I did not recall that we knew that. So thank you for sharing that, Rebecca. But I have less objection to allocating the full amount that was provided this fiscal year, next fiscal year in the beginning, but I would include the amount that is provided to the courts that are using local revenue. So in other words, when it says allocate the same amount of funding, it would be through the end of 2021. So courts that used any local money would get that included in their pot as well. So what might be an $8 million surplus might be 7.2 or, you know, whatever it is. But I do think that we need to, I don't think any court should spend a dime of its local money on interpreter-related expenses if there's a dollar left, because it's unfair for them to have to do that, because these are not expenses they can control. You don't know what kinds of cases are going to be filed, what kinds of interpreters are going to be needed. So, yeah, absolutely no disagreement with that, knowing now that we have a surplus. I would just want to change the recommendation for number two that would say allocate in 2021-22 the same amount of funding provided to trial courts, I guess in 2021, but we need to understand it would be through the end of the year for those courts that are using local money. And yeah, I think that would be enough, but we do need to hurry and make sure that we do the work to move to a work-based model so that when we do get back up to full speed, we are allocating money based on work and not based on historical funding.
Thank you, Sherry. Mike Plenitt, did you have something to add?
The only thing I share David's concern about half-year funding. We would much prefer and operate better when we know what our allocation is at the beginning of the year, and can work from that. So that's the one suggestion that makes it that gives me great concern. And it's, you know, based on the news we got today offers some hope. It's not, you know, the money's not in the bank kind of thing. But when Sherry, David, and I were talking about this, we were looking at a kind of a different scenario for next year. So if this good news holds up, we're going to be in a different scenario, different situation next year. This year, having to take money out of, having to spend local money for any shortfall would be extremely problematic. What it will look like next year, is really an unknown. So I think if we could find a way where we can, tell courts what their allocation is at the beginning of the year, and find some process later on in the next fiscal year, should courts be taking funding out of their spending local funds, might be addressed. But other than that, just some thoughts.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Does anybody else in the group have any comments? So I would just add to that, you all have Nancy's comments in front of you, and I think that David's comments on the flaws in the data that was available, I think they're aware of those, and that her concerns about that would likely be worked through with continued work on a model. I would say from my perspective, I think Sherry's right. We have to continue to work towards an equity and a workload model. But I also agree with a full year approach, because so many of us are operating from a budget that is presented as a full year, and adjustments midway are very difficult to implement. And so with those comments, I'll open it up one more time for comments. And then if no other comments, do we have a motion on recommendation number two? No comments, any motions? Mr. Yamasaki, do I see your hand up?
I was anticipating Judge Buckley to convey his eloquence in skillfully offering motion language.
I you caught me cold here, David, so I am not ready for that. I didn't quite see the change, but Sherry, could you repeat what you said?
Yeah, I don't think a change is needed. I think that as long as we understand that the money that goes to those, that 400 and whatever, 17 or 70,000, whatever money goes to the courts that are using local funds this year will be included in their allocation next year. I think the recommendation says that because it says it'll be based on what is allocated this year. So I don't see where anything needs to be changed.
Equally precise and well stated, Judge Buckley. And if that's the motion, I would second it.
Well, if there's any concern about an ambiguity, what we could do is add to the allocate the same amount of funding provided to trial courts in 2021, including any reimbursements.
I think that's a great addition.
A wonderful addition.
Yamasaki, gave me a challenge, so I had to come back with something.
So, Judge Buckley, and is that your motion, or is that Mr. Yamasaki's motion?
No, I think it was actually, well, I would second, I would, well,
I'll move.
I would.
I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Judge Kelly. David, are you seconding?
I would second that motion as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to all who assisted with that. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? So are there any, is there anyone who is opposed? Hearing no opposition, motion is passed. Okay, so our third recommendation is to expand the number of ad hoc interpreter subcommittee members and continue this as a subset of TICFAC with the members to be determined after TICFAC consideration and approval. Any discussion?
Yeah, I'd be happy to jump in on that. As I mentioned earlier, with all of the gaps that currently exist with the use of CIBCS, it's very obvious that we're going to have to redo this thing in great detail. And realizing that reporting information about how interpreters are used, how many are used, for how what proceedings is very intensive from a personnel standpoint. And I think that it would be helpful to obtain the impact of this activity from a much broader group. I don't know precisely who to include or exclude, rather just a decision to expand the group because there's a lot that's involved, technologies involved, some of the administrative folks. So we at least will have a much more informed approach that we will be dealing with if we were to expand the group. So I would move approval of recommendation number three for the reasons that I had reported.
Thank you, David. Do we have a second?
Buckley seconds.
This is Sherry, I'll second.
Sherry, Judge Buckley beat you to it.
Oh, okay. I didn't see him.
No problem. Is there any further discussion or comments? Any? Okay. Is there anybody opposed to the motion and the second? Hearing none, that motion is passed. Thank you very much. Before we close out on this subject, I would like to ask Brandy and Cottrell, would it be possible for us to as we continue to meet through the spring and get closer to the new fiscal year, to continue to have an updated projection of what is going to be left in the interpreter fund so that we are keeping an eye on that?
Yeah, absolutely, Rebecca. We'll be looking at this pretty regularly and we'll be sure to update everyone accordingly.
That'd be great. Thank you, Cottrell, for your report. Does anybody else have anything on this item? Hearing none, I will pass it back to you, Judge Buckley.
Thanks. So item three is also action required, dealing with the FMS work plan. Randy?
Yep, thank you, Judge. So we've reached the time of year in which the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, or FMS work plan, is reviewed and updated in order to assist in directing the subcommittee's efforts in developing and refining the workload formula, as well as other methodologies. So this time around, and believe it or not, we're preparing for fiscal year 2020, 21, 22, and beyond. So the work plan is presented to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee for review and approval in July. The last approved work plan is in your materials. It's attachment 3A on page 27. So with the pandemic and its impacts, including public health directives and related budget reductions, advisory bodies were recently asked to reevaluate and reprioritize items. So the TICBAC completed this process last December, and items were reprioritized, including FMS work plan items 1 and 3, which are identifying and evaluating the impact of judicial counsel provided services versus those that are funded by local trial court operations funds, and initiating an ad hoc subcommittee to reevaluate the cluster system and floor funding. FMS work plan item 2 regarding court interpreter methodology remained unchanged as a high priority during this process. So today's recommendations are outlined on pages 25 and 26 of your materials, and there's an outline of the recommendations on page 28 that is in a work plan format. So the recommendations include, number 1, moving work plan items 1, 2, and 3 from current year to ongoing through 21-22, and updating language for the court interpreter item that represents recent changes to the funding model. Recommendation number 2 is to identify any new items that should be added to the work plan. And then the last recommendation, 3, is to determine which fiscal year each item should be placed and in what order of priority. So that's all I have. Happy to answer any questions.
Hearing no questions. And I have to admit, I didn't think of it until just now. Is it simply that you want these recommendations to be approved, and then going forward, we would do things such as identify new items or determine the priority of the fiscal year, or is that something we do today?
So if there's anything for adding today, I'd be happy to take it and discuss the priority. Also assuming if everyone is good with the recommendation 1 of moving items from kind of current year to ongoing through next year.
So with that, then we're looking really at page 28. And approving that as the work plan. Again, any discussion, any questions? Entertain a motion to approve the recommendations, and specifically the plan on page 28.
I'll move that. It's Neil.
Thanks, Neil. Second?
This is Rebecca.
I'm sorry, who?
I'll defer to Judge Cope.
Okay, Judge Cope. Any discussion? Anyone in opposition to the motion? Okay, it passes unanimously. We now move on to information only items. Rand, please.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Judge Buckley. Appreciate it. So I'm happy to be here to provide just a very brief update on one current year proposal included in the 21-22 governor's budget. So as introduced in January, the governor's budget included an early action proposal for economic recovery and to provide financial relief to individuals and small businesses impacted by the pandemic. The early action package included $11.7 million one-time general fund in current year for the trial courts to process the anticipated increase in unlawful detainer and small claims filings resulting from AB 3088. The bill provided relief to tenants and landlords by delaying the date trial courts could process unlawful detainers to February 1st, 2021, and allowed landlords to recover unpaid rental debt through small claims court until February 1st, 2025. Due to the recent enactment of SB 91, the administration has withdrawn the proposal for AB 3088 from the early action package. So what SB 91 does, it extends the moratorium on evictions for non-payment of rent due to COVID-19 financial hardship to June 30th, 2021, which is the end of this fiscal year. SB 91 also contains an appropriation of federal funds and statutory changes to implement a rental assistance program as part of the 2020 Budget Act. The bill also imposes a moratorium on actions seeking to recover COVID-19 rental debt until July 1st, 2021. So the extension of the state's eviction moratorium and the establishment of this assistance program is expected to result in a workload increase for the trial courts beginning in 2021 instead of current year. So we'll be working with the Department of Finance over the next few months to determine what additional resources are needed in the budget year to address the new workload for the trial courts to implement SB 91. So that's the quick update on the current year proposal, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Fran, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca, anything else for today? Brandy?
No, thank you very much.
Okay. Most importantly, everyone stay safe. And thank you, everybody. Brandy, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.